An evil little girl gains control of an alien monster who seemingly only wants to kill every single life form he comes into contact with. It's darkly funny and full of 90s throwback Power Rangers style monsters. This is Psycho Gorman. PG for short. Welcome everyone to Screams After Midnight. I am Peter, and joining me as always is Tim.
Hello, and frig off, I guess would be the most appropriate thing to say.
Maybe I should say Tim Vergulish, or TV for short.
There you go.
Welcome, everyone. This is a horror movie podcast. We get together, we talk about horror film. It's quite that simple. This episode, the movie is a vote winner, picked by our patrons. Oh. We had three movies from Tim's top 100 that we hadn't done yet, and the winner was Psycho Gorman, a little film from 2020, which, honestly, as I was watching it, I was like, you know, this could easily be an Ace episode, because it's also kind of sci-fi, but yeah.
That's fair.
But, you know, there's gore and stuff, so yeah, it fits. I think tonally it fits on Screams, even if it's more of a comedy in a lot of ways. But
sure.
We're going to talk about the movie. We'll get into it. We'll start spoiler free, of course, as we always do. And I'll just remind you that if you are enjoying the show, please do hit the like button if you're on YouTube. And I'll tell you more about this at the end. But we do have a bonus episode and some other bonus content that you can get over on our Patreon. So I'll tell you about that later. But yes, Psycho Gorman is a sort of lo-fi movie by director Stephen Kostansky, which has got a lot of old school kind of like throwback elements, not just because it has practical effects, but just even something as simple as how the title appears on the screen at the start of the credits. It's going for kind of an 80s vibe, even though it's never actually verbally said that it's set in the 80s, I don't think. It just kind of feels like it might roughly be set in the 90s or the 80s or something,
I think,
around there.
I want to say, like, at one point they're playing 64, right?
It's a Nintendo 64, so yeah, I guess 90s would be a better comparison. But it's sort of harkening back to a different time. Some of the alien characters look like they're Power Rangers, I think it's fair to say. So but basically, this Psycho Gorman is this monster alien character with lots of killing powers that is awoken. I already made the Power Rangers reference, but a lot like Rita Repulsa, is freed from his prison. But the gemstone that controls him, should someone have it, is wielded by our main character, a little girl who might be the most evil little girl who's ever lived. And that's the premise of the movie, is that a girl named Mimi is controlling the Psycho Gorman. And I say that, they actually name him Psycho Gorman, he doesn't have a name. She calls him that. But yes, so that's the basic premise of the movie. And we'll get into it. This was one that we would have done at the time, but I believe when this hit, this was during your first paternity leave, and we just never went back, and it's lingered, but here we are today, finally to come back and talk about it. I did see it when it came out. Obviously you did as well. So, we'll get into it. So, Tim.
Yeah.
I already said this was on your top 100, so asking if you liked it seems like a bit silly. But why don't you go into some of your basic thoughts on Psycho Gorman?
I was actually a little nervous to revisit it because I think I'd only seen it the one other time. So I was like, oh, this is a lot of pressure because, it's on my top 100 list, and that's an important list, you know, that, you know, people put a lot of weight on that, so I don't want to, you know, go back and be like, oh, it's not as good as I remember, and then, you know, have people lose confidence in me or something. I gotta say, though, watching it again, I was I was pretty happy to return to the PG verse. I still had a lot of fun in it. I don't think it's a perfect movie by any stretch. Like, I think there are some complaints to be made. It is very joke heavy, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because I would say a large percentage of the jokes landed for me. Certainly, you know, this is very more on, like, you know, comedy horror than, you know, straight up horror or whatever. But I mean, which is, you know, pretty evident from the premise and everything. But there was a lot of, like, bits and stuff I forgot about that still really worked for me, and I still thought was a lot of fun. I think the biggest thing that it has going for it is, you know, there's just like a lot of charm, I think, in the, like you're saying, like some of the effects and the creature designs, I think, are so engrossing. Like, I just think they look so cool. And I mean, I can't imagine this was a very, you know, big budget movie, which, which is like, you know, pretty evident, like in some areas of the film. But like, I don't know, there's a lot of like gore and special effects that I still think look and work so well. And, you know, maybe that's, you know, us kind of coming from a time, like you were saying, growing up and watching these, you know, kind of like TV shows like Power Rangers, or like kind of like, I don't know, like 80s fantasy movies or that sort of thing. Like, it's very reminiscent of that. So there is kind of a nostalgia, you know, if you're into that thing. But yeah, for the most part, it still really works for me. I think, you know, not that I want to start off like being like super negative or anything. I think if I do have maybe one complaint, it maybe might be the main character, Mimi. I think she has a lot of funny lines, but it is kind of like nonstop. Like, everything, you know, she says is like a joke. And I don't know, I feel like, you know, every now and again, like, you know, just be like, all right, maybe there's like a little too many jokes here. Or sometimes like it feels a little forced when you're having like, you know, kids talk a certain way or something. So there's some stuff like that I noticed. But again, I don't think it's much of a detriment to the movie, because there's so much like other wildly crazy entertaining stuff going on that, I don't know, it's not like the worst thing in the world if like a joke doesn't always land or whatever. But yeah, so I thought this one was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think what's funny about what you're negative there was, mm-hmm. is that I think Mimi is the biggest asset this movie has, because she is incredibly entertaining to watch be a little shit. Mm-hmm. That, to me, that's a big part of the appeal of the movie. It's like, what mm-hmm. if the shittiest kid gets this power and can right. wield it over everyone else? Like, mm-hmm. Not every line she has lands, I'll agree with that, but like,
that's so, what I meant more. Yeah, yeah, like like, I love the character and the idea of it, but yeah.
Yeah, so many of them do, though. Like, there's a moment early on, like, we're introduced to her and her brother, who play this game called Crazy Ball, and mm-hmm. when she's getting put to bed that night, the mum says, oh, were you playing more Cookie Ball today? And the way she yells out, Crazy Ball! To correct her, made me laugh so much, because the delivery was just so absurd, the way she mm-hmm. yelled it. And that, to me, is a big part of this movie.
Oh, yeah, no, I like that stuff a little bit more when they're, like, when she's being more of a crazy kid. I think, and, you know, it's not just necessarily this movie, but like, I see this in other movies. And maybe part of it is now having kids and being around kids so often, but sometimes I feel like that's just very, like, you know, like, very obviously, like, adult-written lines that, you know, they'll try to, like, force into like, you know, to have a kid say in a movie or whatever.
I agree, but I don't think that complaint applies here, because I don't think this movie has any pretense of pretending that this is how children actually act and talk.
Sure.
Like, I don't think Mimi's meant to be a realistic kid. I mean, obviously some of the shitty attitude is meant to be like a heightened version of what some kids would say and do, but I don't think this movie is even pretending that the kids, or even the adults for that matter, are acting like real people ever would.
That's true. So, I forgot about a lot of the other characters, and the dad was actually getting me a lot in the movie.
Yeah, the dad's got such an interesting, funny character as well. we'll get into all that stuff, probably more in spoilers, so we don't spoil too much. But I think there's a lot of comedy that comes mainly from the kids, but yeah, the dad is quite funny, especially once you get the running gag with him, and it starts to click quite well. I think Psycho Gorman looks great. I think the voice is fantastic. It's you know, because they do a good job of introducing him as this killing machine. So when he clashes with the kids, and pretty quickly, but he gets like one scene where he's just a monster for a while before he then clashes with the kids. And then once that happens, you sort of get where the main thrust of the humor is coming from, which is that this unstoppable killing machine who just wants to murder everyone. He's basically like Darkseid. He wants to annihilate everything on Earth, and he can't because this little girl has the magic gemstone that gives her power over him, and that's it.
The comparison that always kind of floats around in my head is he feels like a lot like Pinhead or some type of Cenobite to me, because he has this very grandiose, like, you know, Shakespearean, like, kind of way of talking sometimes. Also just like the, you know, the gem, like, kind of remind me like of the box a little bit from Hellraiser. So like that's what it kind of felt like to me. It's like almost, yeah, like E.T., but with a Cenobite. And if the kid was just, a pure shit.
Oh, dear. And, you know, it leads to some funny montages. It leads to just weird stuff that she makes him do for her own amusement. The way she interacts with other kids is, like, you know, there's like a sort of other, like, boy called Alistair, who's like this boy she kind of has a crush on. Like, every single thing she says to him is pretty funny, because it's just weird to hear a kid say that. Like, I don't know, all of that was working for me. I think the effects by and large obviously do look kind of cheap, but they always kind of look like they've got some love, like, put into them.
Oh,
like,
sure,
especially all the practical stuff, all the outfits, all the costumes, the makeup, all that stuff looks great. When there is CG, it feels like there is still charm to it because of how it's been used. The only thing that really stuck out to me is feeling kind of shit, and just like shit in a general way, was at one point there's some gunfire and the gun flashes, the muzzle flashes, look really bad. And I think part of that is just because we see that so often in movies, and we know what it is supposed to look like in a movie. When you see a really cheap movie try and do it with like crappy like CG effects, it just looks really, really rough. In fact, the cops in general, I was noticing a lot of inconsistencies in their uniforms. I don't know if you were noticing this, but where the badges or the patches on their shoulders were was like varying wildly between each officer. And I'm like, okay, come on, guys. We couldn't have sewn in the patches at the same height.
I didn't notice that. That's funny.
Because one of them, like, they're like almost at his elbow. Like, that's how low they are. And I was like, come on. But I mean, these are minor quibbles by and large.
Sure.
It's almost weird to like, do I criticize it for not having more of a heartwarming story at the center? Because it kind of like has a story that wraps up in a way that feels that there's supposed to be a bit of a heartwarming touch to it, and maybe I could critique the script a little bit for not quite actually achieving that kind of, what did I compare it to here? I'm going to compare it to Bubba Hotep for a second, right? I love Bubba Hotep, okay. Right?
Yeah,
silly premise, but really endearing, really fun. You know, it's Elvis and a man who believes is JFK taking on a mummy in a rest home, right? But what's surprising about that movie is that by the time you get to the end of it, there's a lot of heart and you really care about the characters. I don't think this movie ever even tries to make me care about the characters. You know, there's always that kind of disconnect of, like, I'm watching something that's a comedy first, and therefore I'm never attached to them, so I don't really care about the emotional outcomes. And maybe that's asking a bit too much, but that would be, if I was to say the biggest critique, or the biggest thing that if that was there, it would, like, propel it to the moon for me.
Yeah.
That would be it. It would be, like, actually caring genuinely about the characters. But as it is, it's very entertaining. It's well paced, doesn't overstay its welcome, and it's constantly funny. So, you know.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Like, yeah, if there was, you could have maybe some genuine heart or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's still like pretty, like, you know, solid without it. Like, I mean, yeah, if it's not trying to be that type of movie, like, that's totally fine, because it's very entertaining as is. But
yeah, I mean, obviously we talked about the main character a lot. I think the performance from the actress Nita Jose Hanna, I think is how you say her name, she's very good. I don't know if she's really done anything else in this. There was a girl in a different movie that came out like a year or two after this where I was convinced it was the same girl, because she was giving me similar vibes. I don't remember what it was now, but it wasn't her. If I look at her IMDb, she's only got this and one other movie that's done, but she is in two upcoming movies, one of which she says Untitled Lumberto Bava and Garetta Garetta Project. So that's a weird thing to see.
Interesting. But,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the only other thing she was in before was one of those Hulu movies, Books of Blood.
Oh, that was a bad one.
Yeah, but it says she's uncredited, so I presume she had a really tiny role.
Yeah,
you know, nothing important.
Yeah, that's a shame. Because Books of Blood is a Clive Barker collection of short stories, and they're really, really good. But I think they did two adaptations from them, and they've both been pretty awful. It really sucks.
That's a shame. The other person we should probably talk about is the director, Stephen Katansky. He definitely likes this sort of throwback, like retro style that he's going for. He also was one of the I don't know if he was the sole director, but he definitely worked on The Void. And he's done a lot of co-director on that one. And he's done a lot of like effects work, which is, you know, maybe why his movies are so effects heavy. I also saw a movie from him called Manborg that he did in like 2011, which sounds amazing, but he did the entire thing basically with green screen. So I don't actually think it's that great to watch, but you can definitely tell like what his tastes are and like all this sort of like tone and humor. In fact, just last year we did Turbo Kid on the Ace. And I was thinking when we watched Turbo Kid, how tonally it pairs very well with Psycho Gorman. There's definitely a similar kind of vibe where it's like, okay, we're doing this throwback, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but there's a genuine love for the things that it's sort of harkening back to. I feel like there's a lot of like, overlap there. So honestly, if you want a double feature, I think Psycho Gorman and Turbo Kid would go nicely together.
Absolutely. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but but have you ever seen, I think it's called Death Stalker? It's like Roger Corman
movie. Yeah, it's like a fantasy series, right?
I believe so. Yeah. But I think that there was just a headline recently that was saying that this director is in talks to remake it, which I don't really know anything about the movie, but just like hearing the title just seems like, yeah, that'd be a good fit.
Yeah, it seems like great. Yeah, so I mean, I like The Void. Again, it had its sort of me rough too. Edges, but I think we really enjoyed that when we talked about it. And then I really like Psycho Gorman. The one mixed on Manborg, but understandable because it was practically a student thing that he was doing basically. Yeah. He did do Leprechaun Returns, which did suck. But I'm not going to hold him on that. I mean, no one can make gold out of Leprechaun, pun intended.
I like that, like, that's what he wanted to do, though. Like,
I don't know if he did. Maybe he just took the job because, this will get me exposure.
I mean, I don't know. Do people really do Leprechaun movies for exposure? It doesn't seem like that.
I mean,
they'll expose themselves to me, which is great, but
Tim loves when you expose yourself to him.
Please, yeah.
No, I mean, that was before Psycho Gorman, so yeah, I mean,
oh wow,
maybe it was like a thing. I mean, sadly, Leprechaun Returns might be the biggest budget thing he's done, because like all of his other things are so low budget that a movie funded by the Sci-Fi Channel might actually be the most pricey one. There's nothing listed as upcoming in his director credits right now, but hopefully that changes. But
yeah, I mean, definitely on board for anything he wants to do. Like, he clearly has a very unique style and sense of fun that, you know, like you're saying that, you know, Manborg wasn't the best thing to watch, but I'm at least, you know, intrigued by it because I'm sure that he'll have some type of, like, you know, flair or cool designs or whatever that, you know, sounds like it might at least be interesting checking out.
Yeah, I think, you know, this movie, we keep saying it's got a lot of, you know, comedy in it, but it's, you know, some of it's really dark comedy where, you know, someone just gets obliterated in the blink of an eye because they say the wrong thing to Psycho Gorman, and that stuff's funny. I think he handles his tone very well and the aesthetic very well, and that's kind of the big appeals here, is that stuff, you know, on top of the comedy itself. So I hope he gets to make more movies. He did like a segment in one of the VHS movies, so that was like the other sort of recent thing that he's done, but obviously that's just one part of an anthology. So I think we'll probably say spoiler warning then, so we can jump into the movie and then talk about it and give some favorite moments, lines, that kind of thing. So spoilers from this point on for Psycho Gorman, you have been warned. So I'll be damned if I ever understood the rules to Crazy Ball.
Yeah. I think obviously, like, that's the joke, that it is just so over the top and nonsensical. But, like a lot of stuff that makes, you know, comedy works, though, is like people just fully believing in it. Like, I love that, you know, how serious they took it and how the other people, like, you know, would be really into playing it.
Yeah, it's basically like a convoluted version of Dodgeball, as best I can tell. The opening scene is the brother and sister playing the game and sort of setting up. Obviously, when I first saw this, I thought, okay, this is just how we're introducing the characters. I didn't think it was going to come back in a big way in the third act. Yeah. But yeah, so that's our introduction to the characters.
I mean, you're talking about like favorite lines or something. For this one line really got me when I think it's later on, like towards the middle of the movie or whatever, when they're playing it again. And I think she just says something like, "The government cannot know about this game." Like,
yeah, she's got a lot of zingers like that. She also has, like, there's a moment when the family are having dinner and she's leaving the room, and the mum says, "Hey, Mimi," and she turns around, and just the way the actress, like, puts her hand on the door frame and sort of does this pose, like, "What is it, mother?" Like, just also made me laugh. Like, I'm like, it's almost like the direction was like, like a diva, like a little diva, like, you're important, and this woman who says she's your mother's filth. that was the direction. That's what it feels like to me. Oh dear. But yeah, we get that they, so okay, right. I never understood how serious they were being with this, right? But she says that the loser gets buried alive. Right?
Well, like, for most characters, yeah, you'd think that would be an exaggeration, but yeah, it's hard to tell.
Well, it's not even, because we don't really know the characters yet. It's the fact that after the game, she makes her brother dig a grave for himself. And he digs a big grave. This is how they find Psycho Gorman. He's buried under the yard. So,
that's very true.
They find the gem glowing, there's some buttons, and I think one of the jokes here is that there's meant to be a specific combination of these buttons to release it, but she just sort of randomly taps them and just it just works. Because later on, when we see the aliens, the one guy's like, "I designed that lock to be like impenetrable. Whoever cracked it must be smarter than us." And she just sort of went doot 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 doot, and it came out. So they've got this glowing rock, and that's basically it. They get, you know, brought back inside for dinner. Or for bedtime, even. And, you know, obviously Psycho Gorman gets up during the night, but this is where we get her funny line about the crazy ball. It's also where we get introduced to, like, the dad and, like, his way of talking to the kids, which you don't get a full sense of him quite yet, but there's even just, like, a couple of things here where, Luke, the brother, he's like, "Dad, is there such a thing as monsters?" He's like, "Well, many people would say, Luke, that man is the real monster." And the mom's like, "Oh, God, shut up. There's no such thing as monsters. You're scaring him." And I don't even remember what they say to her, but she sort of says, but what's funny, though, is Luke, who I think is the bigger brother, like, he says it like he's a little boy, like, "Oh, is there such a thing as monsters?" But when she asks the question, she's like, "All right, so what's the deal on monsters then? Are they real, fake? What's the hubbub?" So, right away, it gives you this, like, way they both talk and really sets apart, like, he's the more normal kid. Arguably, even he's a little too timid for his age. And then, but although that's probably just because he's grown up with her as a sister, whose favorite game is to throw balls at him. So, you know.
I mean, I do like that she, like, does feel like the boss of the family. Like, yeah, she's bossing her older brother around, who seems to be, like, afraid of her. But, like, even the parents seem to be, like, a little, you know, like, we kind of gotta, watch ourselves around her. Like, she just has, like, a very commanding, like, presence to pretty much anyone she meets.
Yeah, and even if it's, like, technically fake or technically, like, you know, even if it's not got any actual power behind it, the way she acts like she does have power behind it is really funny. And then obviously the idea is that once she has Psycho Gorman backing her up, that she does, then she does technically have that power. People do have to listen to her, and we should all fear for our lives as a result.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny because it is, like, at the core, kind of like a very, like, real relatable story, which is, like, you know, kids just don't like being told what to do. Like, they like to be in charge. And yeah, it's funny just watching it now after having some kids and seeing, like, obviously, you know, my kids aren't like psychotic like this, but yeah, there are definitely times where they're like,
time.
But I mean, you know, there is like a, you know, a very real observed, you know, nature to it where it's like, yeah, kids do like to be defiant and push boundaries and stuff. Like, obviously it's heightened to a, you know, very comedic degree, which makes it very entertaining, but there is like some sliver of truth there, I feel, well, like, in the character.
That's what makes it compelling, right? Is that there is based on some truth, even if it is so like absurdly heightened. But and for audience warning, don't worry, Tim's kids will not turn to be psychopaths. He's a very good dad. He lets them out their cage 10 minutes every day for some R&R. It's,
of course, yeah.
Cleans their toilet bucket for them.
Yeah,
very, very generous.
I give them 3 hot dogs a day for all their meals.
That sounds quite. Given what I described about having them in cages with a piss bucket, giving them 3 hot dogs a day sounds like a treat.
I don't know, something like unsettling about having a hot dog for like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But
oh, I agree. I had a hot dog a couple of weeks ago just because, like, the fast food place was out of what I wanted, and I didn't have time to go somewhere else, so I had to go to the movies, and I was starving, so I had to get a hot dog because that's like the, like, you know, like the only meat and bread thing they sell.
Right.
And it was like, just, you know, it's mediocre. It's a hot dog. Hot dogs aren't that great. Yeah. unless you have some nice toppings to go on it or something, it's just there's
some like pretty good hot dog restaurants out here, although I wouldn't include Pink's in one of that. Pink's is like a pretty famous one in Hollywood. I think it's just extremely average or mediocre, but there's a couple of pretty good hot dog places here. But yeah, you do have to like, yeah, fancy it up a little bit, like,
yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. Anyway, how did we get any hot dogs? Oh, you being a horrible parent. Someone call social services. Anywho, so, right, we're interested in the kids, and we also learned that they both know Morse code, which, honestly, never even is that important. Like, I thought it was going to come up in a bigger way. They do use it later on, but only for, like, a cute moment, not for, like, an actual... They needed this to like survive or figure something out or anything like that. But Psycho Gorman gets up and he comes out of the grave and he walks to this like abandoned factory where there's like 3 criminals who have just robbed some old man. And I love how like comically villainous they are. We're like, oh, that old man put up a fight for his stuff. I hurt my hand when I socked him one. So they make it really clear that these 3 guys are assholes. They're awful. And like, don't feel bad with what's about to happen to them, because Psycho Gorman is going to come in and, well, he rips 2 of their heads off at the same time. He just sort of goes like this, goes bleh. So we get like the, you know, I'm sure those props look terrible from the front, but we didn't have to see the front. So from the back, it was just the hair, it was the blood dripping from the necks, it was all good stuff. And then he talks to the last guy who's like scared because he's got like a telekinesis power where he can like he sort of picks them up in a force field and throws them. He did that to the main guy, and then it's only implied at the end of the scene what he's going to do to him, but he's like, I'm not going to kill you, I'm going to make sure your pain's eternal. We find out when the kids find him what that meant, but
that's so funny.
Yeah, but I mean, this is like his big scene, and I think the point of this scene is that to see what he's like on his own when he's just a horror villain. Like, you know, so you can imagine, other than the fact that he's sort of talking as he's doing it, you can imagine this being like a Jason Voorhees scene where Jason comes in and just kills like 3 people very quickly to show how a big scary dude he is. So that's the point of this, for when, you know, next day the kids are going to find him, and all of a sudden it's like these 2 things clashing that shouldn't clash, and that's why it's funny. So yeah, it's good. Although, we can gloss over the walk into school scene, because this has a few gems in it, I thought.
Oh, sure.
They're talking about the stone and, like, you know, the backyard and looking for stuff or whatever. But she starts talking about, I don't know if she says she's going to rule the world or she's going to do something with the stone or whatever, but she grabs her brother's collar, like pulls him in close, and just says, "Can you dig it?" with like a really serious face. And I think that was the moment where I went, okay, I love this character. She's like one of the best characters ever invented. I'm on board from this point on. And the brother's just like, yeah, I can dig it. And I was like, okay, all right, you've got me.
It's very endearing, and yeah, it does a good job of setting up like how, yeah, unpredictable. Like, yeah, you don't really know what you're going to get from her.
Yeah, because this isn't just something that kids wouldn't say. It's also something that most adults wouldn't say. Like, this is a Macho Man, Randy Savage, like, phrase she's spouting out here randomly.
I mean, like, what it feels like is, like, a kid who probably has watched, like, a lot of TV that she probably hasn't, you know, shouldn't have watched, and then she's picking up on, like, these little, you know, like phrases or whatever here or there, like I can see this, like, you know, she watched, like, you know, something like The Warriors or something, and it, like, you know, just like glommed a phrase off of that, and yeah, and it's like using it as like, okay, yeah, like a kid would probably never say that, but it's funny.
Yeah, because then Alistair like shows up and says hey to Luke, and they're like talking about video games. He's like, hey, did you beat so and so yet? And he's like, yeah, on medium difficulty, which actually reminds me, just I want to say this now so I don't forget it later on when he's over for dinner and looks like they're going to play some video games, and he's like, yeah, all right, and Mimi tries to talk him out of it. He says, wouldn't you rather go outside and throw balls at my brother? Doesn't that sound like more fun? Alistair responds to that with, really, I just want to play some vids. What? No one in the history of the human race has ever referred to playing a video game as playing some vids. Okay?
That is more like outrageous than anything like Mimi ever says.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. I was taken aback. I was taken aback by this little shit.
It's, oh my god, it's, I mean, obviously we're gonna get there, but what happens to him is just so goddamn funny.
Oh, chef's kiss. Absolute chef's kiss. Now, when Alistair shows up, Mimi starts like, she basically just like takes this attitude where clearly they're doing that thing where she's got a crush on him, but she's like too embarrassed to admit it, and kids like almost get more aggressive to hide the fact that they've got a crush on someone. So, but she does it in this like weird way where, again, it's like you were saying, she's picked up language from movies or something, but she's like, oh, if it isn't Pretty Boy, why don't you give us a twirl, hunky? And Alistair just like stares at her like, what planet are you from? Your sister's weird, can we go?
Like, I like his reaction though, which is like, you know, I feel like other movies would make him like, you know, be a little meaner or something, be like, like shut up stupid or something, but I just like, again, like everyone is just very on edge and afraid of her. Like,
yeah, he's very just a little unnerved by it. He's just confused. I think what makes it so funny as well is that she's never like embarrassed by the responses she gets. She's just always so shameless in how she says the things she says without a care about what anyone gives a shit about her. It's a thing of beauty. Anyway, later that night, the brother and sister go to, they follow the trail basically from the grave and end up at the factory where Psycho Gorman is, and he comes out and he's like, I am going to kill you, blah blah blah, and she holds up the stone and he's like, it can't be, whoever has that stone possesses power over me, and she quite quickly kind of like gets that and tests it and is like, hey, I'm Mimi, this is Luke, who are you? I have no name. I'm nameless. Blah, blah, blah. So that's all fun. I think actually, probably by this point, we probably had the first scene with the aliens. There's a kind of alien council on the planet Gygax, which is the planet he's from, which just even that name, Gygax, it's just, it's beautiful.
Which, like, all this stuff is like, I feel like whenever we go to the other aliens, like, that's the stuff that feels like really Power Rangers.
Oh yeah, yeah. Me. Like all of their outfits, but and like a really over, like, but it's still stuff that you'd never see on Power Rangers in the sense that there's like one guy who's like a brain in a jar with eyes.
Yeah,
right. So there's some stuff that's obviously a bit more too grotesque for Power Rangers. But then you've got like the main villain of the movie. What's her name? Pandora. right? And she's got this sort of like white, like sort of like, what are those things from Japan? Gundam, right? She's got like a sort of Gundam look to her, with all these white bits coming out of her and kind of like whatever. Mm-hmm. And she looks like Power Rangers. Some of the other aliens look like a lizardy, like snake head looking dude. But they're all practical. They're all get people in suits or prosthetics or, in the case of the brain, probably just like a puppet, I'm guessing.
So. But like, I'm always so impressed with stuff like this where it's like, oh yeah, these are just like very quick, like background characters that aren't even that like, you know, super important or whatever. And most of them are like, oh, I would gladly watch a movie with any of these characters. Like, yeah, they always have like such like cool and interesting looks. And then and now that just reminds me too of the part where I think it's probably the first time we go there, or whatever, when Pandora like summons like the human and just like instantly kills him.
Yeah, basically. So the point of this scene is that they're aware that Psycho Gorman's woken up, and they're like, shit, what do we do? We're all scared because we are like Psycho Gorman, as we find out from him himself in a little bit, basically went on a rampage and took over the planet and killed lots of like millions of people on this planet and other planets out of effectively revenge for being treated like a slave, and they're all worried that he's going to come after them for revenge. So Pandora, who's part of this like angel squad of like soldiers, is like, now we're the ones who beat him before, we'll beat him again. What planet's he on? Like, oh, he's on Earth. And she's like, okay, the main species on Earth is human, summon me one of these flesh bags. And this random woman appears, and she sort of like crushes her with like a force field, which just sort of like squishes her. So she pops like a balloon of blood, but then squishes down into a cube. And then there's like a practical flesh cube that Pandora's then holding in her hand. And I'm like, this is just wonderfully surreal. I love everything about this.
And it cracks me up because I forget exactly what she says, but like the human's trapped in the box or whatever. And she says something like, don't be afraid or don't worry, but then it like instantly like, yeah, just like shrinks and crushes her, and she explodes in like just this giant thing of blood, and it happens like so fast that it's like, yeah, I love that. Yeah, we're not really taking time to like bathe in this or like explain what is happening. It's just like, nope, this is the world, like just buckle in.
Yeah, and then what she does with the cube of flesh is she smashes it on the table and then smears it over her face, and then her Gundam-style like suit starts to fall off, and it reveals the person we just saw. So basically what she's done here is that this random woman she's transported here, she's taking her form, right? So this actress was cast to play a major role, but like it's this Pandora in disguise that she's playing, not obviously whoever she was originally. And it's like, okay, she's coming to Earth, she's got this disguise, we know who to look for when she comes. So I think this has happened maybe around this point, it's hard to tell. So the kids have to go home, and they come back the next day, right? And Psycho Gorman tries to take the stone from her. That's actually a running gag throughout the movie, is that he'll be like, sort of try to sneak up and take it, and she's like, nice try! Yeah. No.
It's really funny.
You're my monster now.
It's funny that it's like so important, but also it's like he could like he just tries to very casually just like grab it.
Very sly, just sort of, you know, I just poke my hand in here.
Yeah.
But they name him, right? Which they go through a whole bunch of shitty names and get on Psycho Gorman, which is, you know, fun. But she also brings him some magazines, and they bring him a TV. They bring him like an old TV VCR combo, so he can watch TV and learn things about Earth. He ends up using it to transmit like a message to his like, I don't know, his like loyal soldiers to come and like kill the kids and get the stone from them so he'll be free. So he does that, but my favorite line of this whole part of the movie is that when she hands the magazines and she's like, I'm sorry there's no pornos, which was a funny line on its own, but then he looks at the page that it happens to open on, and it's like an advert with like a sort of topless man advertising cologne or something, and she's like, yeah, there's none of that, but there is hunky boys. And Psycho Gorman responds with, I do not care for hunky boys. I thought that was funny.
I think For me, it's like that line was okay, but what really sells it is his next line where he says like you said, he's like, oh, I don't care for hunky boys, but then he looks at it like a second longer and then he says, or do I? that for me is what sold it.
It's paid off later, though, because when they're fighting in this area in the third act, the magazine gets, like, destroyed, and he stands up and goes, "Not my hunky boys!" So it does pay off later. It does pay off in a funny way.
I think, like, what's great about something like this is, you know, I feel like if this was, like, a big studio movie or whatever, they would have realized, oh, this is really funny. Like, we got to keep hammering this home. And then, like, you would have heard the line in the trailer, and then they would have had it, like, you know, 10 more times throughout the movie. And then there would have been, like, you know, the model or something shows up at the end, and he's like, "It's the hunky boy." You know, like, I love that this is just a very funny line, but it's just like, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just there, and then it's done. It's not like, I don't know, I just feel like other comedic movies just really beat stuff into the ground.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I get it. I think one of my favorite things about their interactions, though, is that how she'll, like, command them to do something. In this case, she commands him to clap his hands for a while, and then she's trying to think of something, and then she says, "Stop that annoying clapping." And I love the idea that, like, not only is this being want to murder everyone in sight anyway, but this idea that she is so infuriating that he, like, you can tell he's desperate to rip her head off because she's been especially grating. Obviously, I think the first time I watched it, my expectation was is that he's eventually going to respect her because she is so evil. Like, you know what? Yeah. You and I are equals, child. Which is not quite what happens, but that's what I thought might happen the first time I watched it. But so they go back home, and it's actually the next day where Alistair is, or it's maybe later the same day, Alistair's over for dinner, and you know, we've already talked about some of the lines they had at dinner, although we have to mention the dad stuff here, because they mentioned something, I think, about the mum working, so it's like, oh, dad had to step up and make dinner today, and he's like, yeah, I made some delicious chicken, how do you like that chicken, Alistair? And Alistair was, like, too polite to say something, and then looks like, it's a bit tough, dad. He's like, well, the microwave will do that, but it brings out all the flavor. Which is called back to amazingly in a scene that comes quite quickly after this, where he's sitting watching TV and the mum goes to check the microwave and it's just, like, filthy because the chicken's exploded, like, all over it. And she's like, "Hey, what's with the microwave, husband?" And he's like, "I made a delicious chicken dinner for everyone. You're welcome."
Yeah, no, the wife is just so, like, I mean, God bless her. She's just, like, so over it. She's so frustrated. But, it does, like, a really funny thing where it, like, just keeps, like, focusing on, like, I think it's, like, zooming in a little bit on the dad. And he's just, like, obviously the wife is very upset, but he's just, like, "You're welcome." Like, says it, like, a couple of times.
Oh, yeah, we glossed over the scene where they find the hole in the backyard, and, all right, like, the dad's like, "Hey, congratulations on the hole, son, but also, this is out of line." And then he's like, everyone's like, "Okay, but who's going to fill this in?" And it's all, and despite the fact that it should be the kids because they dug the hole, why wouldn't you make them fill it back in? Even the mum is, like, voting for the dad because clearly he doesn't do anything. He's a lazy shit and she just wants him to do it. So he's like, "Okay, I guess it's me." And he picks up the shovel and he goes to, like, take his first clump of dirt. And, like, he goes, "Ow, ow," and, like, drops the shovel. He's like, "My hand hurts," and immediately gets himself out of it. So it sets up this running thing throughout the movie that he just thinks up excuses for being, well, lazy, for doing nothing.
Honestly, the most relatable character in the movie.
Well, just to stick on his stuff for now, just because it's easy to bundle all together. Later scene, if I may even be the scene with the chicken microwave thing they're talking about, where he's like, "Oh, by the way, honey, because my hand got hurt, I'm going to have to take a few weeks off from work. So I also bought a new TV. So you're going to have to, take up a few more shifts at the pharmacy to pay the bills." But he says that without asking her to do it. He just sort of, like, assumes that she will.
Yeah. I think that was a little later, because that was after the montage where the TV gets broken. But, man, yeah, it's so funny. Yeah, I just love how he is so blazingly, like, lazy and doesn't give a shit. And it's funny that, like, that's his arc, and that, I mean, we'll get to it later, but, like, he gets, like, actively, like, mad when someone calls him out for being lazy, like, you know, they called him like a racial slur or something, like he's like so offended. Also though, just that line, like when you think about it, is like really funny, like pick up extra shifts at the pharmacy, like what does that mean? Like I don't know, like I don't think of like the pharmacy as like, you know, as like a restaurant or something where it's like, oh, like, hey, do you want to pick up like the extra night shift or something? Like, I don't know. That just like kind of like stood out as being kind of weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, all this is great stuff. We can't move on from here though, because Alistair, because Psycho Gorman shows up at the house, right? He comes out of the backyard and the kids try to tell him to scram. They're like, hey, what are you doing here? And this is where the parents see him. So the mum comes out, starts screaming and be like, oh my God, get away from my kids. And the dad comes out as well. So we get this big sort of confrontation scene. But before they come out, basically Mimi gets kind of annoyed because Alistair's not shown her any interest. And Psycho Gorman's like, I once set up the princess of another planet to the ugliest of creatures. Would you like me to do the same for you? And then the next time we see Alistair, it's when the parents come out, mm-hmm. he's been turned into like a waist-high brain with eyes that just kind of like crawls along the ground. It's super comical. And he stays that way. He doesn't get turned back. He stays that way for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's so funny because I think, you know, first time watching or whatever, yeah, you expect the, you know, to kind of have a laugh and then like he'll, you know, she'll be like, okay, like now can you change him back or something? But the fact that they just stick with it and that like he has these, you know, in a lot of other instances it would be like generally like heartbreaking or whatever when he has these scenes where he's like, will I ever be normal again? And they're just like, no. Like I mean, credit to Mimi though, like it seems like she still kind of likes him like as this creature.
Yeah, well, as she puts it later, she's not in love with him. She's just like friends that'll get married and they'll spend, you know, the rest of their lives together.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, the parents are freaking out. They're scared. They're cowering in front of this thing. Like, should we call the police? And like, what's the police going to do with that thing? So Mimi steps in and is like, he works for me, okay? This is the way it's going to be from now on. Which I think leads us into the first montage, which is like her.
So funny.
Yeah, she has him like playing drums whilst her brother plays guitar, and Alistair, the big brain, is trying to play keyboard with these little tentacles that he's got. And she's singing, as we see like just other random activities they're doing sort of spliced in. So we see them like. The main thing it keeps going back to is them walking down the street and she's like doing these like finger pointing poses at people. Like she's just like the, you know, she's like the badass in town who's got like her bodyguard. But they're getting them clothes. It seems like the mum gets in on it because the mum's there clothes shopping with them. You get the whole montage where Psycho Gorman's trying on different clothes and coming out of the dressing room and being like, shall I dress like a baker? Shall I dress like a cowboy? Shall I dress like a whatever the first thing was?
I think my favorite part is when they're spying on the dad in the kitchen, like sees like some cookies and a little like Tupperware thing. Yeah. And like they all do this thing, which is like such like a dumb, cheesy sitcom thing. But it's like so funny here where like each one kind of pops to their head, like out of the doorway, like one at a time. But then, it, you know, it's just so funny doing any like dumb sitcom or cheesy montage thing, but with Psycho Gorman, like just his presence just makes it so funny. But I love that the dad's trying to sneak a cookie and then like, yeah, Psycho Gorman just like, I don't know, points his finger at it and it makes like these like demon hands come out and like start like attacking the dad.
Yeah, it's just slapstick more than anything because he's sort of wrestling with this box that has hands coming out of it. Yeah, and
he does like just kill a random kid on the street too.
He does. Some little girl like says something, and he just
so, like nice outfit or something like that. Yeah.
And he just points his finger, and she just explodes.
And like it is like very like it looked like pretty cheap, but again, like that's like there's a lot of fun and like charm to it. That
in an endearing way, just seeing the red liquid kind of like burst like a balloon was quite funny. She's teaching him how to play this crazy ball next. This is where Alistair gets all sad and is like, am I ever going to be normal again? And he just kind of shuffles home because they say no. But this is where the two cops show up and are like, wait, we have to take this guy in. And one cop gets killed quite quickly. The other one, though... Well, actually, sorry, it doesn't get killed. Sorry, no. Sorry. So one runs back to the precinct, but the one that sort of meets his demise here, because this is really funny as well, is that Psycho Gorman fuses the gun to his hand with like these like demon tentacles, and then kind of like almost zombifies his face. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of walking around with a gun sort of like taped to his hand, like a zombie, just sort of moaning and grumbling, and he's just kind of this husk, and he's like, "Child, another player for your dumb game." But the best part of this, though, is that when they're walking in the forest right after this, is that every so often, this like zombie cop will just like accidentally fire the gun, so there's just random dangerous gunshots happening. I think at one point he tries to kill himself as well by pointing at his head.
This was really killing me, and it's great because it'd been a while since I don't think I'd seen it since I come out, so like a lot of this stuff I had forgotten about, and these scenes in particular are really cracking me up. I love that the cops just like come out of nowhere too, like they're just like in a random basketball court about to play a game, and the cops just like just fly up like out of nowhere, and like you said, they're not doing anything, they're just standing in the court, but they're just instantly like, we gotta take this guy in. And I forget when it is, but I think earlier in the movie, Mimi says like out of nowhere, like, "I don't trust cops," which again, that was just a funny random line. But yeah, the zombified gun hand cop is so funny, and like the way he moves and like the torment that he's going through, and like the next scene when they're walking in the woods and he just hands her like this like Valentine shaped heart letter. That she opens it up, and then like in blood it just says, "Please kill me." That was so funny.
It's just dark humor, but it is really, really funny.
And actually that reminds me too, like another a scene that we forgot about early on that also really had me laughing was when they first show up at the factory or whatever where Psycho Gorman is, and we mentioned that one guy from the beginning, he like freezes in never ending torment. And then like Luke just accidentally like backs up into him and knocks him over. And like Psycho Gorman gets so mad. He's just no. Like
they set it up though, because he's like, "Oh, this is my work of art. This is, you know, like he's going to
my masterpiece.
His never ending torment will be forever." And then Luke's bumps into him and his head smashes on the ground. And Psycho Gorman's like, "No, my masterpiece." And then my favorite part of it is that, like, just the mouth that's still intact just before he finally dies goes, "Thank you." Oh, it's so funny. Next up. The soldiers or the other demons or whatever you want to call them, the aliens that Psycho Gorman called for help finally show up. So they all sort of teleport in front of them in the forest. And basically it turns out that they actually turned on him before that's how he get beat, is that they all turned on him. So they don't want him to be saved. They want to kill him. They want it to be over. So he's going to go kill them. Although, Mimi stops him. Basically, she's upset that he isn't like doing what she says, or that he isn't loyal to her. So, which also reminds me, is right before they show up, Luke's making fun of her for having feelings for Alistair. So she says, "Psycho Gorman, I don't like that I'm being made fun of. Kill my brother, please." And Psycho Gorman just like goes to kill him and like rip his head off. And then she's like, "Nah, stop. Just kidding." And Luke is like he just stared death in the face. He thought he was about to die. And given how quickly he's been just ripping heads off throughout the movie, I don't think he was going to do it, because I don't think we're going to lose that character. But you get why the character thinks that he was legitimately about to die.
This might be like the most psychotic she seems in the whole movie, because like she's laughing afterwards. She's like, "Oh, like you should have seen the look on your face." Like, yeah, obviously he would have been like terrified because he was about to die. And it was very fortunate for him that he, you know, was taking his time a little bit, because I feel like other times he's killed people just by like pointing a finger really quick or something. Like, luckily, like he was drawn out a little bit more. Otherwise, Poor Luke.
Yeah, but basically, she earns, like, not loyalty per se, but basically, she basically lets him get beat up by these demons as, like, a punishment. So he's actually getting his ass kicked for a little bit by all these demons until eventually he apologizes. He's like, he has to say he's sorry. And when he does that, she's like, okay, you can kill them all. So we get this just carnage scene of him, like, ripping them all apart. And but obviously the big finale to it is that his mouth opens up super, like, wide to eat one of them, because apparently an honorable death for a soldier where he comes from has been eaten. So he does that at the end of the scene. I should probably mention here that the one of them is actually voiced by a famous YouTuber.
Oh, really?
Yeah. From Red Letter Media, Rich Evans. You can actually hear one of his catchphrases. He says, "Oh my God," at one point. As he's being killed by Psycho Gorman. It's just a quick little voice role, but
that's cool.
Yeah, just worth mentioning. Yeah, but fun scene, for sure. It's
and again, lots of, like, really cool, like, character designs. Like, there's this one that looks like a very, like, you know, like, witch-like. There's, like, this kind of, like, robot-looking guy. Again, it's just very, like, cool that there's, like, all these characters. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I would just like to know more about these, but they're kind of, like, in and out so quick. And I do kind of love any time that he starts, like, going to, like, some type of big, like, speech about, like, his backstory or lore, and, like, the other characters always just seem, like, so disinterested. So, like, this reminds me of the Battle of Blow, and, like, yeah, whatever, like, let's not worry about that.
When he first explains who he is, you do get, like, a full flashback sequence as he talks about it, and you get, like, you know, him on the alien world, being a slave, and all that stuff. But the second time he tries to do it, when they're in the diner, right? It's a little bit before this scene. He just starts talking about another part of his past. And after about 5 seconds, Mimi just goes, "Oh no, shut up. I don't want to hear about this." And then we just move on. And that's it. Yeah. We never get any more of it. By this point, Pandora's shown up on Earth. And she has went to the police station to find out if, like, Psycho Gorman's been spotted, and the cop that survived the earlier scenes there, and he's, like, terrified. And there's actually, like, there's an interesting little joke here, actually, where she talks to a cop at the front. It's this older guy who just sort of says, you know, she describes, oh, has there been any big entities that have been went around killing tons of people? And he's like, nah, nothing like that, sorry, miss. And he's just sort of isn't interested. And then, like, from behind him, this, like, cop who's sweating from the encounter, and all the cops who are, like, sitting around him hearing his story are like, he literally just, weren't you paying attention to anything he said? And he's like, no, not really. Oh dear. But anyway, as we go into kind of the third act, the big setup for it is that there's this divide in the family, because Pandora goes to the family and convinces the mum that Psycho Gorman is dangerous and she's there to stop him. And just to set up why they're in the truck, because the dad's with the kids, is because Psycho Gorman was so injured from the fight with all the monsters, he needs help getting back home. So
he's basically poisoned. I think he says, like, the weapons they used against him, like, had, like, a blood curse on them. So he's basically, like, dying. Again, it's like an ET thing now, where it's like, yeah, you were in the final stretch, and, like, the, you know, friendly monster thing is now, like, you know, endangered or whatever.
So apparently has a power to send a message. So, like, we cut to the dad who's in the toilet, right? He's on the shitter.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why I wanted to talk about this. Like,
I didn't watch this, like, that long ago, but there's, like, so much packed in this movie that, like, I'm forgetting this stuff. So, like, as you mentioned, I'm like, oh yeah, there's really is, like, every scene in this movie, it's like something crazy or interesting or weird is happening. But I forgot about the scene. It's great.
Yeah, he's taking a dump, and this little light comes in, and he sort of looks at it for a bit, and then it's like Psycho Gorman's face kind of appears, like, it's like a little portal, and he, like, the dad, like, jumps back and falls out of the bathtub with his legs sort of, like, sticking out in the air because he's so scared. And Psycho Gorman's like, "We need assistance. Come and get us. We're at this location," right? And he's like, okay, but where am I going? And then like the little portal opens up again. He's like, we're at this location, here's the address. And he says the address. And then there's another beat where he's in the bathtub for a second, and it feels like the portals went away and the message is over. And he's like, I don't know where that is, though. And then the portal opens up again. It's go south on this road and you'll get to this point, and this is where it is. And I'm like, oh, God.
Like every time he just starts shouting, like, find me. It's so funny.
Oh, dear. But basically, the family gets divided. Luke decides to go with the mum and Pandora. And because the dad's been called lazy, he says, how's this for lazy, Susan? And, like, drives off with Mimi and Psycho Gorman. Like, he takes their side. So the family's divided, which is important because Pandora gives the mum, like one of her suits, basically. So it gives her, like, the power to, like, have one of her Gundam-style suits. So we also find out that Luke stole the gem from Mimi. So he's got that now. And basically, Psycho Gorman's trying to tell her, because they go to the factory where they first found him, and he's like, hey, the only thing that'll save me is if you give me that gem back. So it's like, oh shit, she has to give him the gem back, but then she has no power over him, so why won't he just kill them all? So he's sort of like promising that he won't kill her family as kind of a thanks for, you know, saving his life, yada yada. And there's a whole scene here where she's questioning whether or not she should do this. In fact, there's two scenes here that I want to talk about. One is that the dad pulls her aside. He's like, hey, Psycho Gorman, PG, can I talk to my daughter for a second? He's like, yes. He's like, and this is the thing with the dad. He leans in and goes, thank you, like really softly. But he takes his daughter over, and honestly, this got such a big laugh from me. He's like, when I was your age, a stranger wanted to show me his baseball card collection in the back of his van. And I was hesitant, but I went into the back of that van and he showed me his huge, and there's a pause there, baseball collection. And it was very fun, and I'm so glad I trusted him. So I feel like you should trust your dangerous friend.
Yeah, this is so goddamn funny. Like, it's I'd obviously, you know, hopefully no little kids are watching this taking the wrong lessons.
I mean, they shouldn't be. Yeah. Honestly, this conversation is the reason why I'd say kids shouldn't. Not the violence. The violence is whatever. Yeah. The kids should not watch this movie because they shouldn't hear this, because they might take it seriously and not get the joke.
But goddamn, that's such like a funny like subversion of. Yeah, like what you're expecting, like, oh man, like, is this gonna get like go to a really like dark place? And it's like, no, of course not. Like,
well, even the fact that he pauses after the word huge, because you think he's about to say cock, you think he's going to talk about the guy's dick, and it's not. Yeah. Like, all of it is perfect. It's perfectly played. It's so funny. The other scene with her that's really funny here is she goes into another room. There's like a crucifix on the wall, and she's like, God, I've got a really important question to ask you. And you think she's going to ask about this decision to give Psycho Gorman back his gem. And instead, she's like, do I wear these sunglasses or do I wear this pair of sunglasses? And then she's like, why am I asking you anyway? And she takes the crucifix off the wall and like breaks it over her knee and just kind of like storms out again like a diva, like with her hand up in the air and the sunglasses on.
I think she says, again, another line that really stuck out to me, but like, I believe she said something along the lines of like, there's a new god in town
and his name is Psycho Gorman.
Yeah. There's like a couple of like times throughout the movie where like I feel like she like speaks like almost as if she's like narrating a trailer or something. I think it was like one of the times she's like, she says something like he's cool, he's hip, he's now, or like something like along those lines.
Yeah, I think she says that to maybe her parents. She says that to when she's trying to justify like being friends with this guy. Yeah, like honestly, like, I mean, I feel like it's almost a disservice, this conversation, because I feel like there's a danger that we maybe are falling into where we're just kind of like reiterating all the funny bits, because
sure,
you
know, yeah,
that's what makes it good, you know. Like, I'm doing, there's less to necessarily analyze in the way that we typically would, because I wouldn't say that it has a deeper story that we're we're sort of poking at. There's maybe a little bits of commentary, like her not trusting cops or rejecting religion and saying she has her own god now and things like that. You can maybe read into some of those things a little bit.
Sure.
But really not the focus. So anyway, yeah, she realizes that the gem's been stolen. Luke, the mum, who's in the Gundam suit now, and Pandora, who's in her real suit now, show up, and we get our final showdown. And Psycho Gorman is getting beat. Like, he's in, like, the force field, and Pandora's winning. He's like, hey, like, the rules are that I get to, like, challenge you to, like, a fair fight, like, before my death. Like, I get to challenge you to a contest. And for whatever reason, after Pandora agrees, he says, Mimi can decide the contest. So what do you think Mimi's going to pick as the contest?
Well, real quick before I get there, I think at this point she's already given the gem to him, right? So he's like
backing
up on his feet, or
no, I don't think he is yet. No,
because before he was like lying on the couch, like ready, like to die.
He was, but she doesn't have the gem yet, though.
Okay.
The brother still has it. The brother has it for ages. The brother still has it while they're playing the game.
Okay, but then how did he go from like dying on the couch though to being able to like jump and stuff and play in the game?
He got a little better. Okay, what do you want from me? But the gem definitely didn't get back to him till much later. But yes, they're going to play crazy ball. Actually, I love it. Cuts back to like the aliens who are watching this through a portal. You know, the aliens that are worried about getting killed at the meeting table, and they're like, "I don't get sports," and they're just kind of confused and watching and just not understanding what's happening, and we're barely understanding it. Even Pandora's like, "What's the rule again about the spinning or the or what happens when this happens?" kind of thing. So they're playing the game. But ultimately, it comes down to the same thing that the original game at the start of the movie did, which is this thing where the two balls hit each other.
The switcheroo.
And then whoever hits the other one wins, I guess, because Mimi runs in and punches her brother in the stomach.
Yeah. When you do the switcheroo, whoever punches the other person first gets all of their points plus one. And I think they said that it goes up to 68 points for whatever reason. So I think at that point, like, the other team has 67, which it is kind of funny because, like, they're making it seem like that, like, they're, like, the worst team. And, like, even Pandora is constantly, like, saying that she has, like, no idea what the rules are. But they still, like, get ahead. Like, it's not until, like, they're winning until the switcheroo.
I think... the mum's just been looking forward to hitting her with the balls for a long time, so she's excited to play some dodgeball.
I also was kind of laughing, like, the dad, who again has just seemed like so like lazy and stuff throughout this, is like doing like all these like flips and stuff in the air. Like
he's doing flips. They're playing the game. When they seemingly win. Or maybe it's during the match, but the dad like high fives Psycho Gorman, and it breaks his arm. Like you see bones sticking out, like just like before his wrist, and I'm like, oh Jesus Christ! Which actually leads to one of my funniest moments in the whole movie for me. It's such a good payoff to his running gags throughout the whole thing. So there's a whole thing here where the brother and sister kind of like, you know, they reunite, they hug, like she kind of apologizes for being a bitch and he accepts and they hug.
Which is like, that's all he really wanted. Like he knows who she is, but like,
yes.
You know, he just wants like, you know, every now and again, like, you know, an apology.
A bit of respect. Just this is all. A bit of respect. you know, and she may have given the gem back at this point. I can't remember because I think in the background,
it must Psycho
Gorman's like fighting Pandora in the background in slow motion as they are hugging in the foreground. So it's a whole thing.
Right.
But there's a moment here because Luke has changed his mind and is handing over the gem, Pandora like comes to kill the kids. And because obviously the mum was willing to help her up until this point, she doesn't actually want her kids to die. So the mum in the Gundam suit jumps in and blocks the sword. And this is a whole big moment. And Pandora's like, oh, like, I'm disappointed. You're not worthy of the gifts I've given you. And she snaps her fingers and the mum's like suit disappears and she's like all covered in sweat and she sort of falls and collapses into her husband's arms. Which leads to, which I think may be the funniest moment of the whole movie, is that she's in her husband's arms. She's barely awake because this, like, whatever operating this Gundam suit is taking it all out of her. And she's looking up at her husband, barely conscious. And he's like, oh my God, Susan, you're going to have to take me to the hospital. I think my arm's broke. I like that payoff to this running gag that he's been lazy and making her like do things for him the whole movie, to give you this moment where you think, oh, he's going to be there for her because she's almost dead. Like, she's on her deathbed. And he's like, you need to take me to the hospital.
It's just like, it's also like really funny too, that like earlier in the movie, he like basically fakes a hand injury to get out of like digging a hole. So like, just like picking up a shovel, he's like, oh, ow. And then like now, just like something as simple as giving someone a high five, like granted it's, you know, Psycho Gorman, but like, yeah, just trying to do a high five is what like actually like breaks his hand and causes so much pain and stuff.
Yeah. In fact, there was even a moment in the dinner table scene where he started talking about being in the Iraqi war. Like, what was the lead in for it? Because no one asked about war. Someone just said something about their nightmares or something. And he's like, mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I had a nightmare many years ago. It was called the Iraqi war. Or something. It was something like that. It was like so, like, he likes to sound important and like he's got important things to say. But he's just kind of, and the mom's like, oh, he's never fired. He's never been in the military. Don't listen to him. Obviously, Psycho Gorman wins the fight. He opens up his mouth to eat Pandora.
I just real quick kind of talk about she has this big sword and she's, you know, she says something along the lines of like, oh, like you'll never be able to defeat my sword. So then I forget what he says. Like, oh, maybe I need a sword of my own. And then this is very funny, but it's also like, just shows like how inventive and like cool this movie can be, where he starts ripping off like parts of her body to like construct his own sword. It's just like such like a cool like weird idea. Like it's funny, but it is also like genuinely like pretty like awesome.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, the location of this fight is just this like abandoned factory slash warehouse, which is a very cheap location, but that's because it doesn't matter. What matters is the fun antics and the effects, and it feels like a lot of love went into all that stuff for sure. So yeah, after the fight, Psycho Gorman's like, I'll keep my promise. I'll spare your family. He even kind of admits that he's finally witnessed something love, because the brother and sister started singing to each other. He's like, is this love? And it's like, yeah, pretty much. That said, though, he still goes off to murder people. He walks through a portal and just starts killing the people in a street.
I forget the way he puts it, but it's like very funny. Like, he says something along the lines of like, you taught me that like the true power is like love, and I'll use that to like destroy the universe or like whatever, like something along those lines.
Well, I think what I like about this movie, and this plays into the fact that it is a comedy and it doesn't have to do a serious like character arc, is that, well, technically there's payoffs to all the characters. The joke kind of is that everyone is still the same at the end. Like, Psycho Gorman is still going to kill everyone, even though he's learned about love. The brother and sister have made up, but she's still an evil little shit. Like, they've not really changed. Like, the mum and dad, like, despite everything they went through, he's still like, take me to the hospital, even in this moment. Like, none of them have actually learned anything and changed who they are. And I think that's kind of part of the joke by the end, is that it just kind of goes with everything. The only thing that's really happened is that Psycho Gorman would have loved to kill them and then changed his mind and decided not to when he had the choice at the end. So that's it. That's your main change. There's a couple of scenes here at the end, though. The final scene of the movie is as the news is playing, like, oh, this devastation's happening because Psycho Gorman's killing people. Alistair's back home with his parents, and they never mention it, but he's just eating like lunch with them, and he's like a brain at the table just struggling as these two parents are just like quietly eating their lunch.
It's like, I mean, obviously it's very funny, but like, I don't know, the takeaway I feel like is like there's this kind of like depressing reality to it, where it's like you have these very like repressed families where it's like, yeah, we can't talk about what's going on right now. It's just like, yeah, they just, I feel like they're all just like, yeah, have their heads down, concentrate on the food when their child is this like gigantic monster. And it's but it's just such a like funny visual.
Yeah, no, it's a great visual. And it reminds me, actually, earlier on, talking about, because you mentioned there about repressed families and stuff. There's a moment when the final standoff's about to start before the game is played and all that in the third act, where Pandora's demanding they hand over like Psycho Gorman or whatever, and Mimi just kind of says, "Hey, I'll take orders from anyone, not from my mom, not from my dad," and the dad just sort of nods like, "Yep, that's right, and definitely not from you." Yeah, it's like the movie, obviously I'm not saying it's doing anything deep, but yeah, you almost right. do feel like it's maybe commenting on some family dynamics where the kids are in charge, or in the case of this family with Alistair, this sort of repressed, like, we're not going to talk about the fact that our child has a problem, you know. You basically just swap out being a giant brain for being like, you know, having any kind of illness or maybe a mental disorder or something. But
sure,
all very good. Yes. And then there's a little mid-credit scene where it goes back to the Council of Aliens back on Gygax, and they're watching the news programs through the portal of like what's happening on Earth, and like, he can't find us, right? And they sort of look around at each other, and then the main one just pulls out like a gun, and it's like an Earth gun, it's like a six shooter, and he's like, "Well, there's a plan B, so who wants to kill themselves first?" And then the credits keep rolling, which is also funny.
Oh my god.
I think the problem with talking about a movie where its main, obviously we talked about how great the aliens look and kind of like why it's funny a little bit, but I do always feel a little bit bad when we talk about something that's funny, because I feel like all you'd end up doing is talking about, like, is just reiterating all the funny bits. But that's its strength, is how funny it is and how these characters play off each other. So delightful. And it held up on a second viewing. I mean, it still had the same faults that I thought it had in the first viewing, but all of its strengths were still there. Nothing diminished. Like, nothing that I thought was good the first time round went down, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, in one scene that we didn't talk about too that I thought was really funny was the dream sequence where, you know, PG appears in Luke's dream.
That's right. Yeah, in the middle of the movie, basically when he realizes that there's dissent between Mimi and Luke, he sort of like gets this idea. He's like, "Oh, what if I turn Luke against her? What if I convince Luke to like steal the gem and give it to me?" And he does this by getting into Luke's dream and like explaining this plan. But when he finishes explaining all this, he's like, "Okay, what now?" He's like, "Well, we wait for the dream to end."
Yeah,
like, he can't just leave, so he's just kind of hanging out in Luke's dream.
And like, he's in this, I don't know, looks like a weird, creepy like graveyard or forest or something. It's all like dark and red, and there's like these zombies just like crawling on the ground. So it's again, it's just like a really funny like visual to have this, you know, juxtaposition of the, you know, this kid and PG just very awkwardly being like, "All right, so what should we do?" And they're like, "Well, we just have to wait till you wake up." And then like you see these like corpses on the ground just kind of like awkwardly like shuffling around and stuff. That really got me.
Yeah.
And also a good runner too, I thought, like, I forget how often it was, like just like a couple of times in the movie, but I like that, yeah, PG never seems to remember Luke's name.
Oh, yeah. when his alien troops show up, he's like, "This is Mimi and her brother." It looks like, "You should know my name by now. Come on." I probably like it even a little bit more after seeing it again, just because it did hold up as well as it did.
I think so, yeah. Me too.
It's entertaining. It's not over long. It's, you know, it's like 90 minutes. It's well paced. It's constantly funny. The practical effects are fun. I think if you did grow up in the 90s watching, you know, things like Power Rangers and Beetleborgs and VR Trippers, you'll probably like the designs of the aliens in this. And then, you know, if the dark sense of humor works for you, I think you'll get a lot out of it. Like I found it very entertaining from start to end.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, like I said before, I was, like a little nervous, like, if it's gonna, you know, hold up as well. And you know, especially like with a movie like this where it's such an outlandish premise, and then, yeah, is it gonna work as good when you're watching again and you know, like it'd been a while, so I didn't remember like all the punchlines and stuff, but like, you know, in general you kind of know what the tone and, you know, some of the jokes and stuff are. But again, I still found myself laughing, like, you know, quite a bit throughout. Like I mentioned kind of at the start, like I would say not every like joke or line necessarily landed for me, but there's so much in the movie that it's like, even if, you know, every 1 out of 10, you know, lines or jokes, whatever, aren't like the best, like that's still like, you know, a really good like average of times that I'm like laughing or saying like, oh, that's like, you know, really funny or whatever.
Yeah, so. I think obviously some of the side characters, the acting's not great, like the, and I, it's kind of intentional and kind of not. It's kind of this like, yeah, thing where it's going for this style of like being like a B movie, but I do think some of the side actors do feel that they're out of like a, you know, a really cheap movie, like, you know, you'd see them in some, sure, you know, something that the Asylum would make or something like that, which really contrasts from a few of the leads who are actually a lot more entertaining. Also, there was a, and I think this is an intentional thing they've done, but Pandora, when she's in human form, is always dubbed with like the other person's voice, but it did feel a little it stuck out to me, like, right, in a way where like I don't know if I liked it that much, even though I get why they were doing it, because technically it's not this woman's real voice, but yeah, it still felt a bit weird. I don't know, like you could have just had it be that woman voicing the role, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah,
but yeah, very minor quibbles. Like I say, it just it's almost just like it would be an all timer if it had like just a little bit more of like a real character drama at the center of it. And I don't mean like a big one. I'm talking like Bubba Hotep style, where I actually really care about the characters by the end. It's the best I can think to compare it to, because it has, you know, it's kind of a silly premise, but it's done very lovingly and like with a good amount of skill and craft. I think if it had that, it would be like really, really special. But as it is, it's a really great, like, entertaining movie. So
for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I feel in general like just a very interesting, unique premise. Like, you know, there's lots of, you know, so many filmmakers now that, like, you know, grew up on the kind of movies and stuff we love. So we, you know, there's tons of movies we see where it's like, oh, this person's trying to kind of ape this thing or that thing or whatever. But like, I feel like they're dealing like with a lot of stuff that, you know, don't normally see, you know, them kind of make movies about, or, you know, or I guess if they do, it's not done this well. But it really shines through, like, just the kind of love for these type of things. And it makes it feel very like, just something that, you know, that I haven't really seen much of before.
So with all that said, I guess it's time to rate Psycho Gorman. Tim, what are you giving it?
Yeah, again, really impressed with this rewatch at, you know, how much I was laughing and liking, and I still think a lot of the designs and, you know, some of the gore and like makeup effects and stuff, like, just looked like really, really solid. And even when, like, you know, maybe something that's not super interesting is happening, like there's always like so many cool things to look at, or it would quickly go into you know, something cool. It's definitely not a movie that like drags its feet or anything. It's, you're pretty quickly like off and running. And then, yeah, like the kid characters and stuff are still entertaining, even when, yeah, we're not dealing with like funky aliens or anything. So it's a very fun, very charming, you know, solid movie. I was glad to revisit it. It's definitely not perfect. Like, there are faults and stuff, so I'm not gonna, you know, give it like a 10 out of 10 or anything, but I'm still going to give it an 8, like a very solid, like very interesting, very fun, funny movie. But yeah, enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah. 10 is exactly what I was going for as well. I think it's great. I think it's very easy to recommend. It's a very easy casual watch. It's the sort of thing where you hear, I think when I heard the title, I was like, oh, this sounds like amazing, but there's so many movies that have kind of great B movie titles that end up just being shit, especially modern movies where it's like, oh, we're going to try and make this type of B movie, and then you watch it and it's Cocaine Bear and it's just shit. Right. Like, I can't tell you how shit that movie was. Like, I really hated Cocaine Bear. This, I felt like, I guess, lived up to the title, or at the very least, it gave me something that I couldn't have expected with the title, and, you know, it was actually good and had a lot of good qualities. So So yeah, here's hoping the director can go on to do something else and follow up with a movie, because I would say overall this was better than The Void, which I know was only co-directed by him, but I liked a lot of the things in that movie, but I feel like maybe if he's inching, you know, better and better with each film, then, you know, I'd be looking forward to see what he does next time. So
for sure,
that is Psycho Gorman. So yeah, I will tell you now about what you can get over at Patreon. We have a bonus episode that we do every month, an exclusive episode for our patrons at all tiers. Plus, we also do even more stream segments at $5 and up, where sometimes we'll rank a franchise, we'll maybe talk about some recent trailers or something like that. Just some general bonus content that we throw on there. Plus, of course, there's other movie podcasts that we do on Mail Fuzz, such as the Atomic Cinema Experiment, the Sci-Fi Podcast, and Collector's Cut. There's bonus shows for them as well on Patreon. So, you know, if you want some extra stuff, you want to help keep the show coming, keep the lights on, you can do that over on Patreon. So that's that. Otherwise, though, you know, like, subscribe, let us know what you thought of the movie in the comments, all the usual things that help us out, all good stuff. But next time on the show, we've been putting it off, but we do have one or two 2023 movies to still get to. So next week, we'll be looking at Saw 10.
Oh, boy.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know. It actually had a good, the reviews were high for it, surprisingly high. So I don't know what to expect from it, but we'll see.
I mean, at the very least, it sounds like it's one of the better, if not the best, Saw movie, which, you know, is kind of a low bar, because we're not necessarily fans of the franchise, but I mean, hey, fingers crossed, could pull out a win.
Yeah, so we'll see, but that is next week on the show. Thank you very much for joining us, we always appreciate it. Keep watching scary movies, and we will see you next time.